From Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Pamela Wu, in for Beth Ruyak. We begin with this week's Capital Chat segment and further controversy for the Department of Motor Vehicles. The DMV says it bungled voter registrations for 23,000 people. That revelation comes right on the heels of another uproar facing the department, extremely long wait times at DMV offices. Our Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler joins us in the studio to outline the issues plaguing the DMV and what it means for Californians. Morning, Ben.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with the errors made under the state's new motor voter law. What kind of errors are these and how did they happen?
So first of all, we should probably just remind listeners what the motor voter law is. And that is a law passed a couple of years ago that just took effect this past April. The time in between the law's passage and the implementation was to allow the DMV to get its procedures in place to properly run this program. Well, I guess we were learning how some of that worked. But what the program does is it's intended to transmit voter registrations from people who aren't registered or wish to change their registration at the time that they do transactions at the DMV. It's intended to increase the overall number of Californians registered to vote. Maybe low propensity voters, no guarantee that the people who do use this program will vote, but it gets them registered. And a press release from the Secretary of State's office in late July said that since April, so roughly 3 months or so, three, 4 months, nearly 800,000 new voters had registered. So if it was 800,000 until then, now we're a couple months later, it's probably, you know, well over a million. Of those well over a million, we're talking about 23,000. So a relatively small number. And yet we're talking about people whose applications to register to vote were botched. So that's a big deal.
And it's important. This is about our democracy, about our processes. What has the reaction been from elected leaders such as Secretary of State Alex Padilla or the legislature?
Well, I think the reaction's been exactly what you'd expect, is disgust and frustration. So I don't think I quite answered your first question, which was what were the errors and how did they happen?
Yes, how did they happen?
Let me read to you from the DMV's letter to Secretary of State Padilla sent earlier this week. Following an extensive audit of the 1.4 million, okay, so there's the total number that of motor voter registrations, 1.4 million customer records transmitted to Secretary of State's office between April 23rd and August 5th of this year, we have determined approximately 23,000 customers may have been affected by this error. These errors occurred through no fault of the customer and were caused by DMV technicians who had more than one customer record open on their computer screens at the same time, and those records were inadvertently merged. As a result, inaccurate customer information, largely affecting voter preferences such as vote-by-mail options, language, and political party selections, was transmitted to the Secretary of State. Some of the customers did not complete an affidavit of registration to vote. In other words, some people didn't even want to register to vote, and they were registered anyway. Others had their political party changed, something of the like. The DMV does say that none of the impacted customers are undocumented immigrants who received a driver license under AB 60.
So what's the reaction then from electeds like the legislature, the Secretary of State? Will there be hearings? What can we expect next?
Well, the legislature is out of session right now. They've adjourned for the year. The new legislature will adjourn for the end of this 2-year session. The next legislature is sworn in in early December. And so, you know, I've covered the legislature for about 8 years now. I'm trying to remember. It is common to see lawmakers hold committee hearings, field hearings, oversight hearings between year one and year two. I don't recall, and it doesn't mean it hasn't happened, but I don't recall there being all that many hearings held at this point in the 2-year cycle. Right now, everyone's campaigning, and the governing portion of the year is over. But that doesn't mean that it couldn't happen. We will see. I think there's a hearing set on really controversial Delta Tunnels project that there's going to be a hearing coming up on. So, you know, it could happen. One thing I'd like to note is there is a letter that the DMV is sending to customers. It's a form letter. It says, here are some of the problems. It doesn't say, dear individual person, this is the problem that was committed. This is the error with your individual voter record file for you to change. It just says you need to go to the Secretary of State's office to fix it. So if I were someone getting that letter, I might wonder, what? You made the mistake, and now I have to go fix it.
And so what can people do then? They should be, say, going to the Secretary of State's website and checking their registration information for errors?
Well, the DMV is directing people who receive the letter to go to the Secretary of State's website, review your personal voter information. That URL is voterstatus.sos.ca.gov. And if you want to make changes, there's a different website, registertovote.ca.gov. And all of this comes against the backdrop of we have an election coming up in about 60 days or so, and there are registration deadlines as well. And this could mean if people don't realize this or are slow to act, that they would need to cast provisional ballots, which get counted if they're accurate in the end. But there are additional hurdles to go through, and sometimes it can discourage people from voting. So all in all, it's really hard to put a positive spin on this for the DMV, particularly when they're coming out of their other issue, which are the long wait times at field offices.
Right. There was a lot of public outcry over this. Will you fill us in on what the response was and, you know, how legislators responded? You mentioned hearings.
Well, the legislature did hold hearings.
Yes.
But the decision was to give the DMV more money. There was an effort to audit the DMV. Assembly Democrats and Republicans from both chambers agreed. A handful of Senate Democrats chose to block the audit, I'm told, after they got calls from the administration gov's office asking them to have some patience. Mm. There was an infamous quote from DMV Director Gene Shimamoto when asked about the audit, saying that it would be a nuisance, an inconvenience to the DMV. That got some scorn. And then our own Cap Radio's Nadine Sabai was interviewing Shimamoto, I think it was last week at the DMV, and really pushed Shimamoto to say whether she believed the DMV had made a mistake, was at fault in these long wait times. And after dodging it several times, Shimamoto said, no, I don't think we did make a mistake. So I think those are some comments from the director that are getting some blowback. It's also important to say that the director of the DMV, like all other state agencies and senior administration officials, serve at the pleasure of the governor. And one way or another, a new governor will be taking over in early January.
Well, the DMV says wait times are improving. They've released some new data saying that the wait times are decreasing. But still, what can people do to make their experience less of a hassle?
Well, the DMV did send a letter to the legislature this week and talking about some of the things that they've been working on. They say they reduced wait times by 30 minutes. Their goal was 20 minutes. But if wait times were approaching 8 hours for some people, I don't know how much solace the additional half hour is going to be. That said, I would imagine that in a bureaucracy, in a challenging, a hard-to-run bureaucracy, you have to make incremental progress. And so, especially with all of the money that the legislature and governor have been giving the DMV, I think we're approaching, we're not at $100 million on top, but we're approaching there, that this would be expected. They're adding Saturday hours to a lot of field offices, opening other field offices earlier in the morning. They're experimenting with pilot programs. For example, you can go off-site and they will text you saying it's time to come back. So you can go about your business or maybe go back to work. But that's assuming that you live close enough to the DMV field office or you work close enough that you're able to do it. There's going to be other programs too. But the bottom line is the DMV has not had a good last couple of months.
Sounds like the bottom line here for customers then is to really use sort of every tool in the arsenal possible to try to reduce those wait times, like self-service terminals.
Yes, they do point to self-service. They are pointing to, you know, self-service terminals both at DMVs and I want to say like in grocery stores and elsewhere. They've added, you know, registration kiosks and the like.
I'm talking with our Capitol Bureau Chief Ben Adler in this week's Capitol Chat segment. Governor Jerry Brown has until the end of the month to veto bills or sign them into law. You mentioned the legislature's out of session now. District attorneys across the state are calling on the governor to veto two bills that they say are dangerous to public safety. Can you tell us about those bills?
Sure. There's two bills in particular that they are complaining about. One involves a really high-profile case in Davis from a few years ago, and that is the Daniel Marsh case. It's a case where he was 15 years old, and he snuck out of his home in the middle of the night and went looking through the neighborhood, found a home with a window open, climbed in, and stabbed an elderly couple in their sleep, killed them, mutilated them, tortured their bodies. It was really bad. He was sentenced to 52 years to life. So the couple who were killed, their family members were at this news conference yesterday with the DAs, District Attorneys Association, asking the governor to veto this bill. And then the DAs were also asking the governor to veto another bill. So one of the bills, the one that involves the Daniel Marsh case, would prohibit all 14 and 15-year-old criminal defendants from being tried as adults and serving in an adult prison. The district attorneys are arguing that there's no exception in the language for the worst juvenile offenders. Supporters of the measure say, look, 14 and 15-year-old brains are not fully developed, and so when someone commits a crime at that age, they should be given treatment and rehabilitation in the juvenile justice system rather than sentenced to life in an adult prison. But the fact remains, if if this bill becomes law, Daniel Marsh, who's been sentenced to 52 years to life in an adult prison, would be moved to juvenile custody and be released when he turns 25. And that is something that has really put the victims' families on edge. The other bill that the DAs are asking the governor to reject is one that would rewrite California's felony murder law so that accomplices are not sentenced as harshly as those who commit the actual killings, unless the accomplices were intimately involved and aware of what was happening.
Any hint as to how the governor feels about these two bills?
Well, I don't have any firsthand knowledge, and anyone who tries to predict the governor's actions it's usually a fool's errand. That said, I was talking to someone at the press conference yesterday, and they had heard that the governor was actually on the felony murder law when it was short votes in the legislature on one of the final days, was calling lawmakers, asking them to go up on the bill. So that would suggest that he's going to sign it, or else he's going to have some really angry lawmakers saying, why did you make me take a hard vote when you're going to veto the bill anyway? And then as for the other measure, that's maybe the 14 and 15-year-old question. That's a good question. It affects Proposition 57, which is a ballot measure the governor put on the ballot in 2016. And so he will, you know, it moves things in the direction that the governor has been pushing for in his second term of office, which is being rather than tough on crime, as the mantra was in the 1990s. Some folks say smart on crime. That's obviously a subjective phrase. Mm-hmm. But he has sought to reduce some of the sentences in, like, for enhancements for crimes and make it easier for inmates who have shown good behavior and rehabilitation to get out. And so if this bill messes with 57 and it does affect it, governor might say, well, look, I thought 57 had a really good balance. I don't want to change that balance. I'm going to veto it. Or he might say, this continues to move the needle in the direction that I believe criminal justice policy should go, and I'm going to sign it. Anyone who tries to predict the governor, like I said, fool's errand.
Right. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Well, finally, the midterm election is coming, in case some of you haven't heard. Former President Barack Obama.
Oh, no.
Surprise.
There go my plans for the next
surprise,
2 months.
Surprise, Ben. Former President Obama is hitting the campaign trail in California.
He sure is. He'll be campaigning at the Anaheim Convention Center on Saturday morning with all seven Democratic challengers to Republicans in the seven competitive seats that Democrats are targeting. That excludes the San Diego area seat of now indicted Congressman Duncan Hunter. Mm-hmm. I did not see, although there's still plenty of time for that to change, I did not see the Democratic challenger in that race also joining. But from the Jeff Denham seat just south of here in Modesto in our coverage area, mm-hmm. all the way down to the Darrell Issa seat, Issa's retiring. Denham is running for reelection near in the San Diego area. You've got all of those challengers joining the president in this one spot for this one rally. And it's the president's first campaign trip for the midterm elections. He's starting in California. And so if you'll indulge me in a cheap plug, that suggests, as the name of our podcast on congressional races says, that California holds the keys to the House.
You are taking the reins of our Keys to the House podcast. What can listeners expect in the next episode?
Well, as listeners to this show heard last week, Ben Bradford, our awesome state Capital reporter, has moved on. He is going to Marketplace. He's going national, and we're thrilled for him. But that does leave a vacancy with our congressional podcast, Keys to the House, and so I'm taking it over. And look, we've got at least 7 competitive congressional seats in California. We got about 60 days to go, but about 30 days until vote-by-mail ballots go out, and so voting begins at that point. And there's going to be a lot of money spent, a lot of time invested. At least one president, current or former, is campaigning here. We will see if any other president's campaign here. And there's a lot at stake, right? At stake is the ability to advance or block President Trump's agenda and the power to investigate him. And so California tends to not matter very much on the national stage. There's hope that in 2 years, California be having an earlier presidential primary in March, that maybe California will matter a bit more. But in the meantime, if you live in one of these competitive congressional districts or in a media market that is shared with one of them, watch out.
Yeah, you'll be seeing a lot of those ads. That is Capital Bureau Chief Ben Adler with this week's Capital Chat. Thanks, Ben.
You're welcome.
We have complete political coverage on our website at capradio.org. You are listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.